Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Poor Kevin's going to need another vacation. I mean, we have had you working today.
I know. I'm ready to take one whenever you want. Just let me know. I do what's best for you, man. It's always...
I had no vacation days. I've had zero vacation days this year. You've had what? How many?
Listen, I didn't say you couldn't. You make it sound like it was like I said, I'm sorry, Steve, you can't. It's like I don't wield that kind of power.
You don't show up a lot, either. I'm just kidding.
Hey, but when I show up, boy, I bring my A game, man.
I want to tell you right now, Bob, is it really, I mean, is it as easy as I think it is? Or
it is. Hey, Steve, you know, listening to James Franklin, just incredibly articulate. I can understand why, in an interview situation, he would just knock it out of the park. He knows what he's saying. Yeah, but I mean, question and answer. He doesn't give you the spin. He listens to the question and then he answers the question rather directly, and he is able to articulate the points he wants to make, you know, in response to the question. But he's not a Dodger, a Bobber, or a Weaver. He should give our politicians some lessons.
Yeah, believe me, there's three people on this show could. I know that.
exactly.
But I mean, look, when you sit there and you analyze what Penn State has and doesn't have, you have to be honest with the fans so they know what to expect, and then maybe you'll get a pleasant surprise out of it. We all know what Hackenberg brings to the table. I also know that there are certain things offensively you can do that can potentially mask a problem that you might have with an offensive line if it can't protect him. If it can't protect him, you can schematically reduce the job load on them by the scheme that you run. I'm talking about the pass game.
Oh, absolutely.
Running game's a little more difficult. That's mano a mano. You got to get it done there. But in the pass game and with protection, you can run some things schematically that take some of the pressure off of them. That's if they're not going well. Donovan Smith will be one of the top three or four offensive tackles in the entire Big Ten this year. He's really, really good. Now, what do you have to fill in around him? When Angelo Mangiero was there in the spring and played center, he was there the last 7 to 10 days, it changed what they were doing up front because it gave them another experienced hand that has a lot of game experience and quality game experience where he played well. And you could see that. Now, if Wendy Laurent comes on and he plays better, Mangiero also, because of his game experience, can play guard. Brian Gaia is about as strong a guy as you're going to see in terms of physical strength on the offensive line. Now the question is whether he can be a quality guard along with Derek Dowry, because they both got flipped over. And Brendan Mann has been moved from that right tackle spot, and they have him right now at the guard spot. Okay, so they now have him at the at that guard spot, which is really, I thought to be, well, actually, yeah, left guard spot with Dowry. And that means when you go to the tackle spot, the right tackle spot, you've got Andrew Nelson, Chaz Wright are the two guys that right away are two guys that have to step up and get it done in that spot. Nelson, of course, had a knee injury last year. Chaz Wright's just a true freshman. So that's what you have. I think it also puts more pressure on the tight ends, Brent Wilkerson, Jesse James in particular, and also to a point, Adam Brenneman and Kyle Carter, about being solid blockers to help out in this scheme when they're not out in the pass pattern. That makes a difference. And that's something that they'll have to do to really change up front. Wide receivers, they'll eventually have enough of them. But right now, you're talking about inexperience. I mean, DeAndre Tompkins, I think, can be a really good slot receiver for these guys. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then you have, you know, for example, Chris Godwin, Brandon Kurtz, Deshaun Hamilton. I think Deshaun Hamilton is going to get a long, long look at that Z receiver. And then when you look at the X, you're okay there with Geno Lewis and Matt Zanellato at the X. And Saeed Blacknall would be at the X as well. They'll be okay there, just inexperienced initially there. But in terms of pure speed, guys that can straight out, flat out run, they'll have that. Jim Delaney addressed the media today. And as much as we're learning from each coach a little bit here and there about their particular teams, it has been the commissioners that have really stolen the show at every single media day so far because of the heavy issues that are attacking intercollegiate athletics right now. Let's be frank with you. When it comes to the issues of intercollegiate athletics, those who are in charge have done a lousy job of losing the narrative. The narrative of college sports is a good one and a strong one, which we've talked about and outlined many times on this show. But those who are in charge, starting with Mark Emmert, and again, this isn't a pick on him because of the Penn State thing. I'd be saying this regardless. They have not done a good job of putting out there what the narrative is of the benefits of intercollegiate athletics and education. They have not done a good job of that in fending off the money issues. Well, between Mike Sly, Larry Scott, Bob Bowlesby, not so much in the ACC. I didn't really hear much in the ACC. But when it came to Larry Scott, Bob Bowlesby, and Mike Sly, they've been vocal. Jim Delaney's been a leader in this the entire time. Let's pick up his press conference in Chicago.
Good afternoon. It's nice to see everybody again. I want to talk a little bit about some facts and numbers, a little bit about the educational connection to Big Ten Conference athletics and our football programs, and also a little bit about our demonstrated capacity within the Big Ten and also with colleagues around the country to manage dynamic change in the recent past and also going forward. I want you to listen to some of these numbers. You've heard them before, but I want to repeat them again because I think in many ways they describe a good part of our DNA. We are an athletic academic association, and the quantity, quality, and scale of what we do is pretty much unprecedented in intercollegiate athletics today. We have 14 world-class research institutions. We have a Big Ten network that's in over 60 million homes nationally in 19 of the top 20 markets. It's available globally wherever high-speed internet exists. We have over $10 billion of federal research occurring on our campuses, which is greater than the Ivies and the California system combined. We have 5.7 million alumni around the country. We have over 520,000 undergraduate students, and our schools produce almost 15% of the PhDs in the country. We have 126 Nobel laureates, 235 members of the College Football Hall of Fame. And in the last 6 years, our current membership has won 46 national championships in 17 different sports, no fewer than seven and no more than 10, so that we're connected academically, we're connected athletically, we have scale, size, and quantity. And who do we support? Who's this about? We spend over $200 million a year in direct financial aid to support 9,500 men and women athletes on 350 collegiate teams in 42 different sports. We sponsor 28 championships, and we have more than 10 million people attend our events in person, leading the nation in men's basketball, hockey, wrestling, and volleyball. Over time, we've produced over 1,600 academic All-Americans. And since we've been keeping track of graduation success rate and APR, the average APR in the Big Ten leads our peer group. That's the FBS conference group. in football as well as many other sports and on average across the board. So you've been to our campuses and you've seen our stadiums, you've seen all of this firsthand, but it's obvious that what these institutions have been able to produce now and over time is the gold standard for integrating quality educational outcomes and nationally competitive athletics. It's been an exciting and busy year for us. I'd like to welcome our East Coast media outlets. We spent a lot of time in the East Coast over the last year. In addition to announcing Maryland Rutgers 2 years ago, we've been busy building, making friends, and building relationships. And let me just mention a couple of those. We added men's and women's lacrosse as a result of adding Johns Hopkins on the men's side and Maryland on the men's and women's side. And we've placed our first championships in the state of Maryland. We've also announced a relationship with a pinstripe ball at Yankee Stadium. We've established offices in New York City and D.C. We've announced a special relationship with the Big East in the Gavitt tip-off game starting in November of 16. We've established the 1917 men's basketball tournament at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. And we've reached distribution agreements for the Big Ten Network in New York City, New Jersey, Maryland, and hopefully Washington, D.C. in the near future. So this is a new region for us, but we couldn't be pleased with the fit between Maryland and Rutgers and other Big Ten institutions. They truly reflect in every way, as I mentioned earlier, on the academic and athletic commitment to their student athletes. Leading up to the July 1 integration, we're particularly excited about the broad-based participation by our presidents, our faculty, our athletic directors, the Big Ten Conference staff, and BTN staff in a variety of activities up and down the East Coast. We continue to work with these communities to become part of them, and we anticipate the opening games, conference games, with Penn State at Rutgers on September 13 and Maryland hosting Ohio State on October 4. Everybody's really excited about these. Let me talk briefly about the academic reform agenda, but only to reiterate the connection between intercollegiate athletics and education. There's been a disconnect in some ways, but for us, these things are inextricably linked. We want to emphasize them today. Our student athletes compete in football and many other sports, but this is part of their educational experience. We've heard from several conferences about their willingness to support cost of education. Why cost of education? Because it's directly tied to education. And this is what the college model is about. So that education and college athletics is part of the system. It's not part of the system in AAU or Little League or 7-on-7 or professional sports, but it's fundamental to what it is we're trying to achieve. About a year ago in this same building, at this same time, I spoke to the issue of cost of attendance. What should we do if we were able to achieve restructuring, and what should we do in order to advance the educational part of the intercollegiate athletic enterprise? First issue, cost of education. Why? Because that's what it costs to go to college. Year of readiness. Why? It's to ensure the student athletes are properly prepared academically before competing athletically. Time demands. Why? To ensure the student athletes have enough time to be successful in the classroom and in life, including internships and study abroad. Lifetime trust. Why? To ensure those who leave school early can finish their degree and come back anytime. Is there a bell curve in college sports and athletics? There are. There are some great students and there's some great athletes. Some are more interested in academics than others. But that doesn't change our mission, which is to make sure that the opportunity exists for a great education for all of our athletes. So welcome. It's our 119th football season coming up. We've had 118 years of quality academics and athletics. We're in a very dynamic period of change and transformation, and I couldn't feel better about my colleagues in the Big Ten, from presidents to athletic directors to coaches, as well as the leaders in other conferences around the country, who I think have spent time and effort not only to restructure and reform, but also are focused in on a variety of challenges, from the college football playoff to NCAA restructuring to student-athlete reform agenda. And if you take a close look at the June 24 presidentially drafted Big Ten statement of presidents, you can see fairly clearly our athletic directors, our coaches, our presidents, and our faculty are all in the same place. They want education to be fundamentally integrated with the athletic experience. Before I take questions, I'd like to briefly touch on bowl games and college football playoff, both of which are having some changes this year. On the bowl side, we've experienced bowl tie-ins for over 20 years, and it's pretty straightforward. Bowls made selections, and our teams went and played and had great experiences in different parts of the country. Going forward, bowls will make selections, and the conference will make approvals. We're doing this to make sure that our athletes, our coaches, our teams, and our fan bases have diverse experiences over a period of time. We couldn't be more pleased with the bowl arrangements we have. In San Francisco, Pasadena, San Diego, Texas, Fort Worth, Dallas, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Miami, Nashville, New York, Detroit. So we're looking forward to that. We want to continue to grow these games and provide postseason opportunities in addition to the college football playoff. I think Mike has done a good job of outlining what the college football playoff committee will be looking for. And what we've tried to do is structure our conference schedule and our scheduling to deliver an opportunity for our teams if they're successful. We make no predictions. We make no excuses. We will play one major intersectional game, nine conference games, a championship in all games against football bowl championship teams. So if you want to remember what we're trying to achieve, think strength of schedule, 19-10, one intersectional game, nine conference games, one championship, and no games outside of FBS. So we're looking forward to competing this year. We're looking forward to making progress in the reform agenda. And at this point, I welcome your questions. Thank you.
I have lots of questions, but they're mostly for Kevin. All right. We will come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Kevin does that little moonwalk across the room. That's
Michael Jackson has nothing on me.
I hope not. All right.
And Steve, where is the Sunbury Motors studio located this afternoon?
In a broadcast booth at Eastwood Field in Mahoning Valley in the Niles, Ohio.
In the crow's nest.
That's where we are.
Surrounded by birds.
It's like an Alfred Hitchcock movie out there right now.
It's kind of eerie out there, I bet.
No, that's a little further north.
I've got the thing closed.
No, I don't hear the birds now. I heard them earlier, but it did sound a
little...
That's
because I closed the window. That's why.
Okay.
Jeez, you're whining, moaning, and complaining. I'm like, oh,
no, I thought it was great natural sound. I mean, if you can't have the sound of the ballpark, I mean, I can't. All you need is a hot dog vendor, and you're good to go.
Unfortunately, it's also cold here. It's 60 degrees,
ew,
which is about 25 degrees colder than it normally is in this late in July.
I'll remind you that in late November at Beaver Stadium.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's considering we have the window open all the time.
Right.
I wouldn't really get on our case about what we do.
My point is, I'll remind you of 60, if you saying 60 degrees is cold when it's about 30 and a wind chill factor of 20 blowing inward into the booth. And then, then you'll feel nice and warm.
Yeah, but I would know what to wear that day, as opposed to 60 degrees here, and you expected it to be in the 80s, and so you don't have a jacket with you or anything like that.
Oh, wait. Hold on, Mr. Premium AccuWeather subscriber. You mean you didn't look ahead?
Well, no, they weren't. That's not what was supposed to happen here.
I think you better talk to your neighbor when you get back then, don't you?
Memo to AccuWeather.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, it's not what was supposed to happen. In fact, they had a tornado touchdown about, I don't know, 5-6 miles from here last night. It got bad here.
Yeah.
They stopped the game here last night for a half hour for lightning.
Ooh.
And it's been an adventure so far.
Here in the Susquehanna Valley, it's just the monsoon season.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of them. Well, they got a lot of rain here. It looks like a lake out there now.
Well, that's the lake effect from Lake Erie.
Now, we have a lot to talk about. Serious stuff dealing with sports, which means for the last 30 minutes will be no IndyCar talk.
That's it. I'm zoning out.
Exactly.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Very pleased to be brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Take care of all your insurance needs. They make sure that insurance fits your lifestyle, your life. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Bob Buehner in the house today.
Hey, Steve.
Kevin Herr in the house.
Wonderful to be a part of the program once again.
Well, that just dripped with sincerity.
Well, I mean, I want to sound insincere yet. I mean, I don't want to make it sound too, blubbery.
Well, Bob sounded happy to
be
here.
I'm very happy to be here today, Steve, and to talk to you on Youngstown.
You made it seem like we're marching into the sea.
Well, it's just every day is so exciting being on the program with you that I just don't, I have to pace myself.
Kevin's just holding his breath waiting to find out what the Phillies are going to do with some of their excess players.
Yeah, exactly what they're doing now. Nothing.
Exactly.
He's fantasy draft. He's already fantasy draft, okay? He's way beyond that now. He's already in the NFL season. He gave up on baseball in the spring. All right, let's talk about a variety of issues. Jim Delaney, Big Ten commissioner. The people in college have had a golden opportunity now over the past week in public to seize back the narrative that has been taken from them when it comes to paying football, men's basketball players, unionization by Northwestern, that vote, in all likelihood, I think was percentage-wise, ends up being 80% against, 20% for. That's what I understand. They haven't released it officially yet, but that's what I understand it is. And there are people saying, well, no, look at all the money that's brought in, but I think what Jim Delaney in his opening statement was trying to put forward, look, they're spending $200 million a year on student-athletes and sports across the board. So you have to keep coming up with creative ways to get money in today's day and age. And Delaney, of course, has done a great job with the television contracts, and the next one should be the largest one in college history. I mean, that's what should come about from the next Big Ten TV contract. The Big Ten is the last of the major conferences to have their TV contract done. In fact, the next two major television contracts will be the NBA and the Big Ten. That will help out athletic departments exponentially, and the Big Ten has extensive athletic departments. There was a lot of talk a couple of years ago about Texas maybe being a Big Ten candidate. They only have 14 sports at Texas. Okay, that's not a lot of ways that they need to divide up the pie as they go along. And they also have favorable television deals with the Big 12, where they get the lion's share of the money as opposed to other schools because they are Texas. Well, with those TV contracts coming up, people are going to say, look at all the money that they spend. Yet the Big Ten, if you watch the Big Ten Network, you also will see women's soccer, field hockey, men's soccer. You'll see women's basketball, baseball, softball. I mean, the list goes on and on. Plus, now lacrosse is going to be a part of the mix. Those student-athletes deserve their opportunity just the same as a football or a men's basketball player does. They deserve the opportunity. It costs money to do all of this, and intercollegiate athletics has to do a better job of explaining to everybody where the money goes. So they sit around and say, look, there really isn't a lot of excess money because we have all these other student-athletes. The Title IX is an unfunded federal mandate, which everybody supports. Okay, everybody supports it. But you have to have it. And if you're going to have it, you have to pay for it. You know? So Title IX is called ideology. Paying for it's called reality. And that's what it is. It's reality. And for whatever reason, intercollegiate athletics across the board has done a lousy job of explaining that to everybody. Mark Emmert's tried with the ivory tower amateurism. Notice the words, Kevin. Did you hear the words today that Jim Delaney used?
They were very...
collegiate sports model.
Yeah, down to earth, really.
Collegiate sports model.
Down to earth, easy to understand, too.
Collegiate sports model. But it was collegiate sports model. Okay? The only true amateurs in sports today are walk-ons. Those are the only true amateurs. Okay, everybody else is not an amateur. You're getting money. It's just going to paying for your education. Now your only option to play at said school is to have the money go directly to your education. Can't keep it. You can keep your grant money and things like that, your Pell Grant money, which is certainly there and available for you to get and use. And some guys elect to send the money back to their parents because there's a financial need at home. But that is also their choice to do that. If they wanted to, they could say, look, that's mine, and not do it. But they choose, because their family needs it, to do that. And that's where some of the money goes. But they've done a terrible job of – they've lost control of the narrative, where they've seen all the money coming in because it's been one major contract after another. It's interesting when it comes to numbers and finances. People are very open to find out exactly and telling exactly how big contracts happen to be. And everyone knows what James Franklin makes. Everybody knows what Sandy Barber is going to make as the athletic director. That was released on Saturday. I mean, they're open about that, not open about it. There's like mixed transparency when it comes to that. And when it comes to television contracts, they're pretty open about how big the slice of pie happens to be, whether it's the ACC contract or the Pac-12 contract, SEC, all with ESPN or with CBS, whatever it happens to be. So those were the big things that came out today of reiterating exactly where they're going. And, of course, Pat Fitzgerald has had to talk about the unionization issue. And to his credit, I think he's handled it very well. He waited to the right moment that he was allowed to legally talk to his players about unionization, and then they voted. It just can't be the union doing all the talking, saying, hey, here we go. I mean, they need to have a balanced perspective on what it means to be unionized. You will now be paying union dues. As a salaried employee, yes, you'll get money, but you'll also pay taxes. You also have to pay for your education out of what they give you. I mean, so you sit there and you start outlining these things, And most student athletes will tell you they think they are getting a great deal. Almost every student athlete will tell you this is a pretty good deal. And they all are. Look, and the percentage that go pro is exponentially small, even in football and men's basketball. And on top of that, the ones that do go pro benefited from getting free coaching, free weight room, free food, you know, free film work, you know, on and on and on and on and on. Because if they went to IMG Academy, guess what they'd be doing? Paying for it.
Exactly. Steve, I have this thought that the conference leaders, when they hear Mark Ermert from the NCAA try to explain things, just huddle in their offices and go, oh boy, here we go again. You know, they can't come out publicly.
Well, I know I do.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I don't think they cannot come out publicly, but I think they're saying to themselves, boy, can't we find a way to replace this guy as the spokesman for college athletics, because he's doing such a horrible job, and now we have to go out on our media days, and we've got to explain things and put the reality test back on the table and explain to people what it is we're really talking about. Because he does, meaning Ermert at the NCAA, he really confuses the narrative for a lot of people.
He does. Well, he does, but here's the issue, though, Bob. He's also the head of the NCAA, which means when you are called in the O'Bannon case, they're not going to call the spokesperson, they're going to call him.
Yep.
When you go before Congress and Senator Claire McCaskill's committee, you're going to send him. He's the president. You're not going to send a spokesperson.
Right.
Because she demands that it's him that be there. He has to do a better job, or they have to do a better job of coaching him, where he has the ability to talk plainly about things and not do it in such a way where he's talking about amateurism and getting confused about why there's a sponsorship on a schedule card or why there's a sponsorship on the back of a backdrop behind an athlete. Tell them straight out, okay, the sponsorship on that schedule card, we're all for. Do you want to know why? Because that happens to be a corporate partner of that university, which goes into the general fund for athletics to pay for scholarships. That's why we're glad it's there, because it takes pressure off the ticket buyer and also allows us to expand the number of sports that we have, because we have corporate partners like that that make a donation like that that we're happy to recognize. And as for Vizio and Discover and Allstate and the backdrops that you see, same thing. It also is a way to put money into the coffers that immediately goes out the door to spend on student athletes across the board, and not just football and men's basketball players. All of these things that you see sponsorship-wise are a means to an end, and whatever the number happens to be. I mean, you're talking at Penn State, it's 800. So let's just say for it's 100 schools. So 8,000. Student athletes across the country that have an opportunity, the vast majority they'd never have an opportunity to have unless we did things like this and were creative in our corporate sponsor models. And it's because we're creative in our corporate sponsor models, we're able to have more student athletes participate.
And just
that's the answer.
Yeah, it is, and it's also the over the last 30 years, look at the opportunities that women have had to come and participate in sports, because Congress passed a law, and we responded to that mandate, which was unfunded by the government, by creating additional revenue sources so that more women would have more opportunities in more sports and more events. Thank you very much, Madam Congresswoman. I would just say it that
right.
way.
But exactly. I mean, this is the 42 years now of Title IX.
Yep.
At Penn State, they will be celebrating this year 50 years of women in sports. 50 years of women in sports at Penn State. So 8 years before Title IX came up, 8 years before Penn State had some women's sports. You know, the Della Durants and the Ellen Perrys who were out there, and the Pat Misers who were out there as pioneers and all that, and all this before Title IX came up. And that's the important part right there. And Penn State's been a leader in this. And, you know, everyone who has daughters wants to have, obviously, an opportunity for them to succeed just like their sons. Title IX opens that door, and Sandy Barber, by the way, is going to be a perfect example of someone who has succeeded through the system of Title IX because there was a sport available in college for her, and there was also, you know, an opportunity for her to get an education, get a degree, and eventually down the road get her MBA. I mean, she's a perfect example and shining light of what an opportunity in women's sports can mean for a woman.
Steve, I know that Sandy Barber went to Wake Forest as an undergrad and played field hockey. Do you know where home for her is? Do you recall?
Yeah, Maryland.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's just she's Maryland. She's from Maryland.
Now, the thing that was, so, I have to say this.
I want to say Severna Park.
Okay, right outside Annapolis.
I want to say Severna Park.
Right outside then Annapolis. Yeah. I was hoping she'd come out and say, well, this line's not original, but I'm from nearby Pennsylvania, and I have a Penn State heart. And she doesn't have to quote James Franklin directly, but I was hoping she'd say something like that when she was announced. That's just me. I was so taken back with the breath of fresh air that James Franklin brought in his opening comments about Penn State. It would be nice if every Penn State new coach or athletic director would just simply say that. That would just make me feel good.
Well, you could... Yeah, you know what? But you could tell her enthusiasm about this job and what it means. Look, if you're an athletic director, she's now going to get an opportunity to really be the CEO of a $100 million corporation. She's
sure.
going to get that opportunity now, as opposed to then having her hands tied constantly by the California system. And I'm not knocking the California system in any way, shape, or form, but I'm also explaining that it's not the easiest system to work under because of the budget restraints in Sacramento and how the system works. I mean, that's something that the Chancellor Cal has to go through, and also she had to go through there. Now, they changed chancellors, and he wants his own team, obviously, in place, and people say, well, hey, she was let go or reassigned or whatever. There's circumstances where he wants his own team in there, and I'm telling you, it turns out that I think it's going to be to Penn State's benefit. I think people are really going to like her management style. I think they're really going to like how she goes about her business in treating the students. I think the coaches are going to like working with her. She's a problem solver. Now the next part in all of this is, to me, the next big thing, besides the start of the football season, which will be huge, is obviously the second annual Mitchell report, the yearly report. And what does that lead to? Because, look, it's become painfully obvious. Like, if you're the Big Ten, you want Penn State in a bowl game, okay? If you're the Big Ten, you want Penn State in a bowl game. If you're in college football, I think you want Penn State in a bowl game. I also think that if you're in college football, I think, you know, you kind of look around and say, hey, look, they've done all these things now. They've hired an integrity officer. There's a new president. There's a new athletic director. There's a new football coach, you know, and so forth. It's time to look around and say, you know what? How much more do they need to do? That's why the next Mitchell report coming up is the next huge step in all of this. And then to see if the NCAA, with pressure from the Big Ten, does the right thing. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kevin, you've been awfully silent the last half hour. A lot of people depend on what you think.
I've just been enjoying the banter. I've been just like everybody else, kicking back and listening in.
So you've been doing nothing.
I'm just going to sit here for the rest of the show now.
He worked hard today, everybody. He was the one that got the James Franklin part. He got the Jim Delaney part. He actually did a lot of work today.
I actually did something today. Most days, it's a little questionable.
Today, you did a lot. You're good.
Just love to hear James Franklin speak at a press conference. He just handles things so well. You know, it's a no-spin zone, to take a Bill O'Reilly quote.
He does handle it well. There's an interesting article that was written today by, let's see, I think his last name is Yoder, that I looked at. And talk about what a bad week it was for sports broadcasting. The number of the Stephen A. Smith thing, Tony Dungy thing. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on. And it's interesting. And the Ray Rice thing actually has brought out incredible sports talk vitriol in some quarters.
Absolutely has.
Toward women who are in broadcasting. It's Matt Yoder's his name, and he wrote this. Okay. WEEI criticizing Aaron Andrews on July 16th, July 23rd. They offer an apology, but then get in deeper with saying more stuff about Aaron Andrews. Sam Ponder tweets a thought-provoking question about the objectification of and disrespect of women online. For her troubles, she gets abused on social media. July 25th, Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless debate the Ray Rice suspension. Okay. Michelle Beadle calls out Stephen A. Smith, speaks about her own experience in an abusive relationship, then gets terrible abuse on Twitter for her trouble. July 26th, okay, another woman working in sports named Amy Lawrence of CBS Sports Radio. Okay, same thing. What's going on here? What's going on?
It is bizarre.
I know everybody is trying to carve out their spot on the broadcast landscape so they set themselves apart from everybody. You know, we just like to have fun here and have thought-provoking conversation. Most of the fun's at Kevin's expense.
True.
But contractually we're obligated to.
No. I got to change your contract.
Bob and I really don't want to.
No.
But we're told we have to.
It's in the contract. Yeah, this is really...
But I don't understand. I don't understand. Why can't you have a high-level conversation about what we just talked about the last half hour?